Well, hello, my name is Richard Klemm, W0IS, and I'm the author of the Plain English Study Guide for the FCC Amateur Radio Technician Class License that's available at Amazon and a number of other places. You can find more information about it at my website, W0IS.com, and you can find out more about how to order it and listen to the rest of the recordings in this series. I'm the author of this book, and I've learned that most people are able to pass the test quite easily by reading through the book one time and possibly doing a little bit of extra memorization to learn some things like frequencies where you're allowed to operate and so forth. On the other hand, I also realize that different people learn differently, and for some people, being able to hear the material will be a great help. So that's why I'm providing this series of recordings. I might not necessarily cover every single item that's on the test, as I do in the book, but I will certainly cover a majority of it, and I think you should be able to easily pass the test just with the material that's given in these audio recordings. But like I say, to make it a sure thing, you'll probably want to read the book also and take the sample sample tests, the test questions that appear in there. In this this first recording covering chapter one, where we talk about basic electricity and electronics, for many listeners who have some understanding of electricity or radio or electronics, you'll find this very elementary. But I do think it's important to start at the very, very basics to make sure that you understand what's going on. Because the electrical questions that appear on the test are actually quite simple as long as you have a good basic understanding of the underlying material. And I think just by having that kind of basic understanding that I'll try to impart here in the next few minutes, I think you will have no difficulty with the test. As you probably know, electricity is caused by the flow of electrons. An electron is a tiny subatomic particle, and in something like a wire or other electrical conductor that has an electric current, that means that electrons are flowing through there. And in the book, and a lot of other authors do the same thing, they get kind of an analogy to say, you know what, that's actually very similar to water flowing through a piece of pipe. It's obviously not exactly the same thing because electrons are not wet like water is, but it's a good analogy to think in those terms, because seeing water flowing through a pipe is something that you can actually visualize. So it's a flawed analogy in many ways, but like I say, it'll give you kind of a basic idea of it. So at some point, we'll kind of start talking about water flowing through a pipe. And I think that can clarify some of these concepts. But again, remember that what electricity is simply electrons flowing through an electrical conductor. Well, with water, you want to measure that. You measure it in gallons per second or whatever. Well, we can make a similar measurement of electricity, the flow of current, and the current is measured in amps or amperes. Ampere is the full name, but 99% of the time it's just abbreviated as amps. So 1 amp of current, that means how many electrons are flowing through a piece of wire. And 1 amp, and you don't have to remember this for the test, but just to remember that it's a really big number, just to keep in mind that 1 amp equals 6 followed by 18 zeros electrons. So it's a lot of electrons per second. That many electrons per second is equal to 1 amp, and that's how we measure electrical current. We don't measure it in gallons of electrons per minute as we would water, but instead we measure it in terms of 6 followed by 18 zeros electrons per second. That is equal to 1 amp. And one of the questions on the test will probably be, what is the unit of electric current? And you have to remember that current is measured in amps. And again, you don't have to remember what that number is, but you do have to remember that electrical current is measured in amps. Now, in a water pipe, another thing is also going on. You can think about how many gallons per second are flowing through that pipe. But there's another thing going on in the water pipe, and that, and they're related. We'll see how they're related in a little while. But that is how much pressure the water is under. So if you have this water pipe, it might be a lot of water flowing through it, or it might be a little bit of water flowing through it, but it might be under a lot of pressure. So in the case of a water pipe, you know, so if the water is under a lot of pressure and you poke a little hole in it, the water is going to come bursting out really fast. On the other hand, if it's not under very much pressure and there's a leak in the pipe, well, then the leak will be much slower. And that we call water pressure. We usually measure that in something called pounds per square inch or something like that. But electrical pressure, we don't call it electrical pressure, but it's a similar concept. We call that voltage. Or sometimes we call it electromagnetic force, or excuse me, electromotive force, EMF. The most common term for that is voltage. And voltage is another word for how much pressure the electricity is under. So you can think of voltage as being the same as pounds per square inch. So if you have a pipe with water with a lot of pounds per square inch and you poke a hole in it, it's going to shoot out with a lot of pressure. Similarly, the electricity can be, no matter how fast it's flowing, remember the rate of flow is called the current, but the pressure, also known as electromotive force, is also called voltage. So remember, you have to remember those two things for the test. You have to remember that current is measured in amps, and you have to remember that electromotive force, also known as voltage, is measured in volts. Now, there won't be a question on the test saying, what is voltage measured in? Answer volts. That won't be on there because that would be too easy. So if they do put that question on there, it'll ask how much what is the unit, how do you measure electromotive force? We talk about a lot about electromagnetic stuff in here, but here it's called electromotive force. But just remember that force is another word for voltage. So when you see that question about what is the basic unit of electromotive force, you'll be able to remember that the correct answer to that is voltage. Now, as I mentioned, there is a relationship between that force and the flow of current. Kind of stands to reason, because if you have that water pipe and the water is under a lot of pressure, well, it's probably going to run a lot faster. You're going to get a lot more gallons per minute than you would if it was under low pressure. But it can vary a little bit. It depends how thick the pipe is, because if you have a very skinny pipe, even if you have a lot of pressure, you're not going to be able to get a lot of water to go through it. On the other hand, if you have a really big pipe, you'll have a lot of flow of water, even if you don't have a lot of force, even if you don't have a lot of pressure. So if we have a water pipe, well, that the skinny water pipe has a higher resistance because it doesn't let water flow through quite as well. A really thick pipe has a low resistance. Well, sure enough, with electricity, there's a similar concept. And it's not necessarily based on the size of the wire, although that actually might have something to do with it. But some substances have a high resistance. They're like really skinny pipes that don't let the water go through very well. Some substances have a low resistance, they do let the water go through very well, or in this case, the electrons go through. If something is a really, really good conductor that has a low resistance, well, then we call it a conductor, because that is something like copper that conducts electricity very well. We call that a conductor because it has a very low resistance. Something, on the other hand, with a very high resistance, well, if the resistance gets high enough to be like infinity, then we call it an insulator. An insulator is something with a really high resistance. In other words, something that electricity will not go through at all. One question that might be on the test is, give an example of a good conductor. Copper and aluminum are among the best conductors. But in general, almost any metal is going to be a good conductor of electricity. Most other substances are not. So for example, glass or plastic, or dry wood or rubber. those are going to be called insulators. So if it'll ask you for an example of a conductor or an insulator, most of them are pretty self-explanatory, and you should be able to pick those out. Now, we can measure how much resistance a piece of some piece of an electronic circuit has, and we measure the resistance of something in ohms. 1 ohm, O-H-M, is the unit that we measure how much resistance something has. So if something has 0.00001 ohms, that means it's a very good conductor. It is not, it does not have very much resistance. But if something has a resistance of 1 million ohms, well, then it's pretty close to being an insulator, because it does not conduct electricity very well. So when you go to the electronics store and you can buy a component called a resistor, well, when you buy it, you ask for one of a certain number of ohms. You can buy a 10-ohm resistor or a 1,000-ohm resistor or a 1,000,000-ohm resistor. And later on, we'll learn, and you probably already knew these, about some of the metric prefixes like kilo or mega. When you buy a resistor of 1,000 ohms, you would probably call that a 1 kilo-ohm, K-I-L-O-H-M. You only put it in 1 ohm, but it's really kilo-ohm. Resistor is the same as a 1,000-ohm resistor, or a 1 meg-ohm resistor is really a 1 mega-ohm resistor, or 1 million-ohm resistor. So when you see if you see the terms kilo-ohm or mega-ohm on the test, just remember that that means 1,000 ohms or 1 million ohms. Another word that you might see on the test is potentiometer. And another word for a potentiometer is a variable resistor, because some resistors, like the volume control on a radio, are a variable resistor. If you want a lot of volume, you turn it up all the way and it has a low resistance. If you want only a little bit of sound, you turn it down all the way and it has a high resistance. So you can adjust the resistance, and that component is called a potentiometer, which doesn't really make sense. You would think something called a meter is gonna be, you know, something that you look at to measure something. But no, a potentiometer is just what a variable resistor is called. So even though that word doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense, that's one that you have to remember for the test. Before we get into Ohm's Law, we have to remember that there are a couple of trivia questions that might be on the test. You might need to know, because remember, the measure of electromotive force is voltage. Well, you have to know the voltage of some common kinds of batteries. So for example, you have to know that a normal flashlight battery, like a carbon zinc battery or an alkaline battery, puts out about 1.5 volts. You have to know that. You have to know that nickel cadmium batteries, which is a type of rechargeable batteries, put out about 1.2 volts. You just have to know that. So the rechargeable nickel cadmium battery puts out a little bit less voltage than a flashlight battery that you can buy at the store, an alkaline or a carbon zinc. You also have to know that another type of rechargeable battery is the lithium ion battery. A car battery is known as a lead acid battery because it's mostly made out of lead, and there's acid in there. And for that, you need to know that each cell in a lead-acid battery is about 2 volts. So if you've ever looked at your car's battery, you notice there are 6 little compartments in there. If it's an old-fashioned one where you can unscrew the top and look in and see the water, you'll see that there are 6 little caps up there, because each one of those cells puts out about 2 volts. And to get 12 volts out of the battery, you hook up 6 of them in series. And we'll explain what series means a little bit later. But you have to remember that regular carbon zinc battery, that's the non-rechargeable type. You need to know that's about 1.5 volts. You need to know that a car battery or a lead acid battery, each cell is 2 volts, which is why there are 6 of them in your car battery. And you have to know that a NiCad battery, which is short for nickel cadmium, you need to know that that's about 1.2 volts. Also, another little trivia question. You probably already knew this. A mobile radio. You're going to put a mobile radio in your car. So you go out and you buy a radio to install in your car. What voltage does that radio usually operate on? Well, it's a pretty common sense answer. You're going to put it in your 12-volt car. So it usually requires 12 volts. So that's actually one of the questions on the test that you should be able to figure out just from your common sense. So sometimes when you see something like that, it looks so easy. You think, boy, this must be a trick question. But no, there are some questions on there that are just easy. So if you go out and you buy a radio that you're going to put in your car, what voltage does it probably work on? Well, the answer is 12 volts, because as you know, your car has a 12-volt battery inside. Now, there will be questions about Ohm's law on the test. If you remember your high school algebra, well, then you only have to remember one version of Ohm's law. Just remember any of the versions, and then you can work out the other ones. So for example, you can just learn that volts equals amps times ohms. Or you can learn that amps equals volts divided by ohms. Or you can remember ohms equals volts divided by amps. So these questions on the test are going to be very simple, because you just memorize those three formulas that I just gave you. And I'll give you some hints on memorizing that. And if you get on the test and you see a question that says something about 2 amps and 5 ohms. So you're reading the question and it says, 2 amps, blah, 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 5 ohms, blah, 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 blah. You just remember volts equals amps times ohms. So the answer is going to be 10 volts. And all of the questions on the test, there are not any trick questions. If you see the word amp and you see the word ohm in the question, then you multiply them together and you get volts. Or if you see the word volt and ohm in the test, the answer is going to be amps. So if the question says blah, 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 10 volts, blah, 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 2 ohms, you know that the answer is going to be amps equals volts divided by ohms. So the answer is going to be 5 amps, because that's 10 volts divided by 2 ohms. Or if the question says blah, 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 volt, 2 volts, blah, 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 1 amp. Well, you know the answer is going to be ohms. And ohms equals volts divided by amps. So in that example that I just gave you, it'd be 2 divided by 1. So the answer will be 2 ohms. So again, if you see two of those words on the test, well, then the answer is going to be that third word. So if you see volts and amps, the answer is going to be ohms, because it'll be volts divided by amps equals ohms. Or if you see on the test volts and ohms, you know that the answer is going to be amps, because you get volts divided by ohms. Or if you see amps and ohms on the question, then you know the answer is going to be volts, and you just multiply those two numbers together. So you have to memorize those three formulas. Volts equals amps times ohms, amps equals volts divided by ohms, ohms equals volts divided by amps. Now, if that's if that's a lot of memorization, so one easy way to do it is you draw a circle. Just draw a circle, and you're going to write down three things inside the circle. Up on the top of the circle, you'll write volts. Down at the bottom half of the circle, you write amps, ohms. So you have a circle, and up on the top it says volts. And down at the bottom, it says amps, ohms. Well, so you write that on your scratch paper as soon as you get in to take the test. You just make that circle. Put volts up on the top, put amps and ohms down at the bottom in that circle. And then you get the first question, and you see the word amps and ohms, and you know that the answer has to be the other one, has to be volts. What you do is you just put your hand over the thing that you want to find. So let's say that you need to find volts, because you get the question that says blah, 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 2 amps, blah, 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 5 ohms. And you know that you need to get the answer, that other thing. That other thing is volts. So you cover up volts with your hands. And sure enough, right there in front of you, The thing that you can see is you see amps written next to ohms, and they're written on the same line, so that means you multiply them by each other. So the answer is just right there in front of you. It just says multiply amps times ohms. Or let's see, you get the test question that gives you volts and ohms, but you need to find out how many amps it is. So what you do is you put your hand over the word amps, and what do you have left? We have volts up on top and ohms down on the bottom. So that means divided by. Anytime one number appears on top of another one, that means you do division. So here you put your hand over the word amps, and the equation is right in front of you. Volts over ohms, volts divided by ohms. So it tells you what formula to use. Or the test question gives you volts and amps, and it asks you, and you need to figure out how many ohms it is. Well, you cover up the word ohms with your hand, and all that's left in your little circle is volts over amps, volts divided by amps. And that will give you the correct answer every single time on these. So one way or another, you have to remember those three formulas. Volts equals amps times ohms, amps equals volts divided by ohms, and ohms equals volts divided by amps. You have to remember those three formulas for the test. You can just memorize the three formulas like I told you, or like I say, draw that circle. And again, the only thing you have to remember is which one goes up on the top when you draw the circle. And the answer is volts goes up on the top, and the other two go down on the bottom. So as long as you can draw that circle, get in there before you get your first question. Just make that circle on your scratch paper, and you'll be guaranteed to have the answer for all of the Ohm's law questions, even if you forget the formula. Now, another item that I start to cover in Chapter 1 that I don't go into a lot of detail, I'll go into more detail, and one that I can't help you too much with the in the audio version, one where you really have to look at it. Well, you have to know the schematic symbols for a lot of components. So in Chapter 1, I introduce you to the schematic symbol for a lamp, for a battery, for a resistor, and for a potentiometer. And remember, a potentiometer is another name for a variable resistor. So that's one thing where you have to dig out the book or find some other written material so you can find what all those schematic symbols look like. Like I say, me describing them to you in a picture right here probably won't help too much. But they're pretty obvious. The light bulb looks kind of like a light bulb. The resistor is a zigzag line, which sounds like something that would slow down electricity passing through it. I guess once you get used to it, the battery symbol looks kind of like a battery because it has positive and negative plates in it. Like I say, you will need to know all those schematic symbols for the test. So take the time to look those up and make sure that you recognize all of the possible symbols that will be in the test, both the ones in Chapter 1 and I introduce some in later chapters as well. For the test, you need to know the difference between direct current and alternating current. And for the technician test, you don't need a super in-depth understanding, but you just have to remember the direct current, which is the kind of electricity that comes out of a battery, always flows in one direction. Now, it's actually kind of a deep philosophical question to say which direction does it flow? And we don't actually have to know that, but the electrons come out of the negative terminal of the battery through the circuit and flow back into the positive terminal of the battery. But like I say, that's kind of a philosophical thing, because if you think of it as flowing the other direction, that actually works just fine too. But direct current simply means that the current is always flowing in the same direction. Alternating current, on the other hand, changes direction constantly. So your household current that you plug your electric light bulbs into at home, that is alternating current. And it's alternating current because it changes direction. It goes through a full cycle 60 times every second. So in other words, it changes direction 120 times per second. But we measure that full cycle, and we call it 60 cycles per second. And we have a fancy term for that. We call that 60 hertz, H-E-R-T-Z, named after old Heinrich Hertz. But hertz is just another way of saying cycles per second, or number of times per second. So 60 hertz electricity means that the electricity goes through a complete cycle of changing directions 60 times per second. One other word that you have to know, and you don't have to know it in detail yet for the technician test, is that there is something called impedance. And all you have to know for the test is that impedance is very similar to resistance, but it only applies in alternating current. You measure it in ohms, just like you would with resistance. So it's similar to resistance, but not quite the same. And it applies only in the case of alternating current. It doesn't apply in the case of direct current. For the test, you need to know the difference between series and parallel. And the words series and parallel are words you use to describe how you hook things up. So if you have two resistors or two capacitors or two batteries or two of any kind of electrical component and you want to hook them together, well, there are two ways you can hook them together. Series means that you hook them up end to end. So you take, if they have plus and minus terminals, you have to alternate between plus and minus. So the plus terminal of one battery goes to the minus terminal of another battery. And you just line them up in a straight line and hook them together. You hook the plus of one to the minus of the other one, and the plus of that one to the minus of the next one, and then the plus of that one to the minus of the next one. So lining them up end to end or in a straight line, that means you hook them up in series. When you hook two things up in parallel, that means you hook them up side by side. So if they have plus and minus terminals, you hook all the pluses together and you hook all the minuses together. So it just means, so parallel just means side by side, series means end to end. If you think about these following statements, these make a lot of sense, and they should make sense. If they are in series, well, that means the same current is flowing through all of them. Because if you take two pieces of pipe and put them in series, well, then all of the current is going through every piece of pipe. Because it goes through one pipe, and they're laid end to end, then it goes into the next pipe. So the current is the same if they're hooked up in series. If they are hooked up in parallel, this is not quite as obvious, but if they're hooked up in parallel, then the voltage is the same in all of them, or the pressure is the same in all of them. So that first one, if you forget those, if you just remember that first one, if they're hooked up in series, then the current is going to be the same because it goes through one and then the same current goes through the next one. Well, if you remember that, then you should be able to remember that if they're in parallel, then the voltage is the same because the current is different, because some of the current is going to go through one, some of the current is going to go through the other one. Now on the test, you will need to know several metric prefixes. The ones you have to remember are kilo, mega, giga, milli, micro, and pico. So you have to remember those because as I mentioned before, if the test says that there's a 1 kilo ohm resistor, that's just another way of saying that it's a 1,000 ohm resistor. Or if the test says, your new radio will cost megabucks, well, that means it'll cost $1 million. So if those terms are on the test, you have to know what those prefixes mean. And then just substitute. If you see the word kilo there, and you're going to have to do some math, as soon as you see kilo ohm, just instead of writing down kilo ohm, write down 1,000 ohms. Or if it says 3 kilo ohms, write down 3,000 ohms. So the ones you have to remember are kilo, which means 1,000, mega, which means 1 million, giga, which means 1 billion, or one followed by 9 zeros. Milli, like in millimeter or millisecond, that means 1/1,000. Micro means 1/1,000,000. And pico means 1/1,000,000,000. So actually 1 followed by 12 zeros. Or in other words, a millionth of a million. is the same as Pico. So that one's probably new to you. You probably heard all those other ones before. Pico is not used out in most other applications other than radio and electronics, because a lot of capacitors, turns out, are measured in picofarads, because they're not just a millionth of something, they're a millionth of a million. So you will see that a couple of times on the test. And also giga, you probably haven't seen that too often, but giga just means 1 billion. It's used for really high frequencies. So we'll talk about frequencies later on, but just in case you already know, you know what a frequency is, well, 1,000 megahertz, another way of saying 1,000 megahertz is to say 1 gigahertz. So there's actually only one question on there about with the prefix giga, but you don't want to, if you get that question, you don't want to get it wrong. So in fact, the question is 2,425 megahertz equals what? And the answer is 2.425 gigahertz. So just remember that 2,000 megahertz is the same as 2 gigahertz. So run through the questions, make sure that you understand them, make sure that you're not doing them backwards and so forth. For example, one of the questions is, how many milliamps is 1.5 amps? Well, how many milliamps? These milliamps are the really small things. So there's going to be a bunch of them. So you remember, you're going to have a high number. 1.5 amps, how many milliamps is that? Well, that's 1,500 milliamps. So go through all of the practice questions, make sure that you understand all those, and you'll have no problem with that part of the test. Well, there are also going to be some questions about power on the test. And here's another one where you have to remember that a formula, and there are actually three versions of the formula. The main formula that you have to know is, well, what is power? Well, you know what power is. You want your radio transmitter to be nice and powerful. You want it to put out a lot of watts. You want to have a lot of punch from your signal. Or a light bulb has power. So that's why you can have that's why a 100-watt light bulb is going to be brighter than a 10-watt light bulb, because it puts out more power. What you need to know for the test is watts equals volts times amps. And in fact, for most of the questions, that formula is the one you use. Some of them, there might be a little variation of it. But you have to know that watts equals volts times amps. So if you're reading a question and it says blah, 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 120 volts, blah, 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 2 amps, you know that the answer is going to be 120 times 2 equals 240 watts. So if you see a question with the word volts and amps, well, the answer is going to have the word watts in it. And you get it by multiplying, because watts equals volts times amps. Like I said, just like with Ohm's law, there are two other variations of this formula. There is volts equals watts divided by amps. So if the question gives you watts and amps, the answer is going to be volts. And also amps equals watts divided by volts. So if the question gives you watts and volts, well, then the answer is going to be amps. Again, for most of the questions, watts equals volts times amps is the one that you're going to want to know. But some of those other variations might be on there. So again, this is another one where you can draw that circle before you, as soon as you get your piece of scratch paper. Off in the corner of the paper, put a circle. Up at the top, you write watts, or just W. Down at the bottom, you write volts and amps. You write a V and an A. And again, so then when you get the question, your watts is up on top, volts and amps are down at the bottom. If you get the question, you choke, you forget the formula, well, you just put your hand over the thing that you want to find. So the question says, how many volts are there if this many volts, or how many watts are there with this many volts and this many amps? Well, you need to know watts, so you just cover up the word watts, and volts and amps are written on the same line, right next to each other. That means you multiply them. Or if you get in there and the question says, how many amps are there here? Because we have this many watts and this many volts. Well, you need to find amps, so you cover that up, and there on your right there staring at you is the formula. Watts is up on the top, volts is down at the bottom. That means watts divided by volts will give you the answer. So again, if you remember to draw those circles, and we'll have one more circle like that later on in another lesson that you'll want to know, as long as you have those circles drawn in your scratch paper, just memorize how to draw those circles. And then as soon as you get that question, you'll be able to get the right answer. So like I say, even if you choke and you just totally forget what the formula is, well, you wrote it down right before you started taking the test. So it's practically like cheating, except it's not cheating because you memorized how to get the formula, and there it is right on your piece of scratch paper. Now you have to know about decibels. There are going to be a lot of questions about decibels. And what is a decibel? A lot of people think, oh, a decibel, that has something to do with sound. Well, it could have something to do with sound, but what a decibel is just a ratio. It means this thing is this much louder than this other thing, or this thing is this much stronger than another thing. So if something is twice as strong, and you don't have to know why this is, but if something is twice as strong, if something doubled, well, that means 3 dB. Just trust me on that. When something doubles, that means it went up by 3 dB, 3 decibels. 3 decibels is another way of saying that something doubled. 3 decibels equals it doubled. 10 decibels, this one's easy to remember. 10 decibels means that it went up by a factor of 10. So if you went from 1 watt to 10 watts, that means it went up by a factor of 10. It went up tenfold. It went up 10 times. That's another way of saying 10 dB. Now, if you just remember those two facts and a little bit how to work with them, you will be able to get all of your decibel questions on the test correct. Because everything is a combination of that. Except there's one thing that you have to remember is you break down the problem. Let's look, for example, let's try to find the hardest problem here. Well, we don't even have the hardest problem. Well, okay, the hardest problem here on the test is what's the dB change? How many decibels changed when it went from 12 watts to 3 watts? Well, it went down, so that's a negative number of decibels. It went from 12 down to 3. Well, what happened when it went from 12 to 3? Or let's say, what happened if it went from 3 to 12? Then it would be a positive number. If it went from 3 to 12, what happened? Well, at first it went from 3 to 6, and it doubled, right? And then it doubled again because it went from 6 to 12. So it doubled once, and it doubled again. The first time it doubled, that's 3 dB. The second time it doubled, that's another 3 dB. So here what you have to do is you have to add the decibels together. So you take 3 decibels plus 3 decibels, and the correct answer is 6 decibels. And on this actual test question, it says it went down from 12 to 3, so the correct answer is negative 6 dB. That's all you need to know for the test. You can just memorize these. You can just memorize the one. And here, you can just memorize them right now. If you don't understand what I'm talking about, when it went from 5 watts to 10 watts, what happened? Well, it doubled, so the answer is 3 dB. And then the other one I just gave you, it went from 12 to 3. What happened? It undoubled twice. So it went minus 6 dB. What happened when something went from 20 watts to 200 watts? That means it went up by a factor of 10. A factor of 10 equals 10 decibels, 10 dB. So those are actually the only 3 decibel questions on the test. So like I say, if you don't really understand what's going on with decibels, you can just go ahead and memorize those 3 facts. There's a little bit of miscellaneous stuff covered in chapter 1. Most of it make kind of common sense. Well, we talked about volts, amps, and ohms. Well, you might want to measure these things. Well, how do you measure ohms? Well, you use an ohm meter. How do you measure volts? You use a voltmeter. And how do you measure amps? Well, you might guess amp meter. That's close enough. That's kind of hard to pronounce, so they just call it an ammeter. So that makes sense. You have an ohm meter for measuring ohms, a voltmeter for measuring volts, and an amp meter for measuring amps. Or if you combine them all together, sometimes we call it a VOM, but on the test it's called a multitester. What's a multitester? It's just a thing that you can buy at Walmart, a meter. It's just for measuring ohms, volts, or amps, depending on where you set the switch. It's called a multi-tester. You need to know that when you measure voltage, measure the voltage across the thing that you're measuring. To measure resistance, you have to take the thing out of the circuit, because if you just stick your ohm meter into something that's already powered up, you'll get some bad readings. Make sure that your ohm meter is set right. I guess there's a question on there saying don't blow up your ohm meter by putting it on the wrong setting. As a ham, you want to know how to solder, and all you have to know for the test is you want to use rosin core solder. What happens if you have a cold solder joint? Cold solder joint is bad. You just have to know that it's grainy or dull. That means you didn't do a very good job of soldering. A couple of other components, again, you have to know the picture of an inductor. An inductor is really just another name for a coil. So the schematic symbol for an inductor looks like a coil. Looks like kind of a curlicue of wire twisted together. Inductors have something called inductance. It's measured in Henry's. An inductance is the ability to store energy in a magnetic field, because that's what an inductor is. It's an electromagnet.